You're listening to B2B Nation, a podcast from Technology Advice designed to help marketers navigate the modern B2B buyer's journey. Here's your host, Mike Pastor.
Audience marketing. It's essentially the practice of building an audience of prospective buyers for your product or service that you inform and educate until such time as they're ready to buy. Sounds pretty intuitive, right? It is. But it's often a tremendous challenge to pull off successfully. Most marketers work in an environment where it's difficult to play the long game of audience building because leadership wants revenue now. So while audience building can generate significant returns over time, what's a marketer that's under pressure to do?
I actually advocate, Mike, for companies, those executives who are allocating resources, I advocate for them to separate demand capture, the people who are bringing in pipeline this quarter or this month, from the people who potentially could build that longer term audience. If you have the same person wearing both hats, how's that prioritization going to go? All right, do all the short term stuff, do all the tactical stuff until we hit that lead number or that pipeline number. And once we hit the number, Mike, by all means, go play and do all that fun audience growth stuff. And what in actuality, what will tend to happen? You'll probably get to the very end of the quarter, barely, you know, having any time left to make that making that number before you get to do any audience development stuff. The resources really have to be separated.
That's Balaje Oyedije, a marketer with more than 20 years of experience building audiences in the B2B sector. On this episode of the B2B Nation podcast, I'm talking to Balaji about how marketers can combine short-term and long-term activities to meet their immediate needs for leads, opportunities, pipeline, and revenue. We'll also discuss how to have the long-term versus short-term conversation with leadership, how to earn the trust of today's audiences, and Balaji's favorite tool. Welcome to B2B Nation. Balaji Oyedije, welcome to B2B Nation. Why don't you take a minute and tell us who you are and what you do?
I am a Jedi rebel, Michael, striking against the empire of marketing automation, trying to put the human back in inhumane marketing. Okay, so that's a little tongue in cheek, but I've been a B2B SaaS VP of marketing, 20 years in the game, and I help brands build a long-term competitive advantage through audience development.
So lately you have been preaching about this idea of audience marketing, and when I hear the term audience marketing, this is what I think of. And if your definition differs, you can let me know. But I think of it as creating and distributing content and creating an audience of your ICP. These are people that fit the bill, who should buy from you, who are interested in your products and services. Maybe they have everything but the intent. They aren't in market right now. But you're building brand affinity, you're building a relationship with them so that when they are in market and they do need you, you're going to be one of the first people they come to when they need a solution. Is that how you describe audience marketing?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good definition of it, Mike. And audience marketing is perhaps one of those terms that has a bit of an intuitive meaning to it, but putting it into practice is much less than intuitive. So I think a lot of marketers would nod their heads up and down if we ask them, is it beneficial to build an audience of prospective clients and to establish a relationship with them? That sounds as wholesome as apple pie. You know, I mean, like, that sounds great to me, but so few brands are doing it.
So when I think about building an audience, and I have a background on the editorial content side, so I've been there, and the first thing that comes to mind when I hear audience building is it takes time. And for a lot of B2B marketers, when you look at your goals, you look at the pressure that's put on from leadership and by sales leaders, time is a luxury a lot of B2B marketers don't have. So let's start there. How do marketers overcome the time challenge when you talk about audience marketing?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So I want to frame it this way, Mike. I grew up in Nigeria in a fairly large city, a city of 4 million people in Nigeria. If that were in the US, that would be second, I think, only to New York City, maybe to Los Angeles as well. But the infrastructure was maybe not enough to support that population. What that meant, Mike, is that we frequently would not have running water in the house. We would sometimes go days with no water. And so we established this cadence of driving miles all the way across town to essentially fetch water. We'd go to the local dam and put water in buckets and jerry cans and all sorts of containers and get it back to the house. We had to do that to survive. A lot of families did that. And it reminds me of B2B marketing. Audience marketing to me, Mike, is essentially building a well in your backyard before you're thirsty. Now, a lot of our execs are going to say, well, we don't have time to build a well. We are thirsty today, right now. If you find yourself in that situation, by all means, let's not get academic or theoretical about this. Make that drive across town, go fetch that water. Do what you need to do to get prospects who are in market or near market into your funnel. You got to do that to survive, to keep the lights on, to keep the water flowing. But imagine, Mike, a whole childhood, a whole lifetime of living that way. My family, we were fortunate that eventually my parents were able to afford to build a well. It took maybe 10 years for them to save up that money. So you might not be able to dedicate your limited marketing resources today to building that well. But do you really want to go in perpetuity, driving every day across town, fetching that water? For some people, that's the unfortunate reality. I would maybe just present it to my fellow marketers this way. Long term, we're not talking this quarter or next quarter. Long term, as you manage your career, do you want to be known for water fetching or well building? I think we're at that sort of fork in the road where we actually have to take a bit more control over how we want our careers to turn out. We can't work for that great brand any longer for 30 years, Mike, and then retire and get the golden watch and, you know, the nice trip or whatever. People are working for companies 5 years, 4 or 5 years, 6 years now, and then they're moving on. So how do you want, you could actually do the water fetching at this stop, at the next company, and the next, there will always be a market for that. And so I think part of it is you need to do what your company needs short term. I actually advocate, Mike, for companies, those executives who are allocating resources, I advocate for them to separate demand capture, the people who are bringing in pipeline this quarter or this month, from the people who potentially could build that longer term audience. If you have the same person wearing both hats, how's that prioritization going to go? All right, do all the short term stuff, do all the tactical stuff, until we hit that lead number or that pipeline number. And once we hit the number, Mike, by all means, go play and do all that fun audience growth stuff. And what in actuality, what will tend to happen? You'll probably get to the very end of the quarter, barely, you know, having any time left to make that, making that number before you get to do any audience development stuff. The resources really have to be separated.
So I've had conversations with quite a few B2B marketers who, given the current economic situation, given the economic situation over the last few months, have had to focus very hard on short-term wins, short-term gains. And the problem that they ran into is that once you work through those short-term gains, if you haven't been investing in top of the funnel, there's nowhere for the pipeline to come from. So you use up your short-term gains and then you go and look for where's the next business going to come from, and there's nothing there. So it has sent a lot of people back into the top of the funnel after they put all their efforts into the bottom of the funnel to try and get those quick wins and please leadership.
That's right. And I could share a lot of short-term tactics. I've been in this situation. I worked for 3 B2B SaaS startups in the past 4 years. And every time we found ourselves in the state of emergency, every quarter, the leads are down. We're not on track to make the forecast, you know, all hands on deck. So what does that actually mean when your executive says, we're not on track to make the forecast, do something? what is actually in our power to do. Here are four things you could do. You could accelerate deals already in the pipeline, right? I think that's actually, that's like the bare minimum. That's stuff we already should be doing, marketing along with sales. We should be talking to people already in the pipeline. So that's a good practice. Got it. The second thing, we could find in-market buyers that we haven't spoken to yet. So these are people already looking for a solution and convince them to enter our pipeline. Now, one might argue, well, haven't we kind of already been trying our hardest to do that all quarter to reach as many in-market buyers as possible? Or were we kind of holding back earlier until the boss said, okay, now really try it. Like, we're already trying to reach all the in-market buyers, but that's another lever. The third, you could find buyers who are not in market, but they are near market. So they're about to enter a buying cycle. And how do you identify them? You know, you're looking for signals as a proxy. Maybe they've got a new executive, or they just had a new fundraise round, or maybe their contract with your competitor is going to be ending soon. Sometimes there's some backdoor ways by which you could tell that. So that can be difficult to do. It can be like trying to shoot a bullet with a bullet. Like, the timing just has to be impeccable. But if you're able to identify near market buyers, oh, that's a good opportunity for you. So when the boss says we're not going to hit the forecast, that's the third lever. And the final one, Mike, target out of market buyers. So these are ideal prospects who are not considering a solution right now, and persuade them, convince them, charm them. But here's the thing. There's a rising group of marketers who are arguing that this element of persuasion, whether you're a marketer or a salesperson, perhaps is not as influential as we've been led to believe. If you really think about what makes up demand, you know, we like to talk about generating demand or creating demand. What actually makes up demand? There's an old school acronym, a sales acronym, BANT. Like, a lot of us will be familiar with BANT. Oh, I'll use an updated version of BANT, which is called FAINT. So F is funds. That's kind of the same as B for budget. But F is funds. We don't have any impact on whether prospects have funds or not. The A is authority, so ensuring that the individual you're speaking to has buying authority. The I in FAINT is interest. Are they interested? Now, that's one that marketers and salespeople could, we could nudge them. We could get them interested in our solution. The N is need. Do they have a need? This one's a bit of a controversial one. You know, one might argue they could have a need but not be aware of it. That's different. But either they have a need for your solution or they don't. I don't think we can take someone who doesn't have a need for our product today and, based on our gift of gab, now manufacture need. And then the T is timeline. So on what timeline are they considering buying a solution? The argument here is that marketers and even salespeople can only impact a small portion of what makes up demand. And so our best bet is, one, talking to in-market buyers. So these are people who already know that there's already demand, and trying to get them to choose us. That's maybe 5% of your market. For everybody else who's, they're the right prospects, but they're not in market, do we want to have any sort of relationship or conversation with them? Or do we simply want to wait until they get in market and then it's a dogfight between us and the 10 other brands? That's the question.
So earlier this year, we at Technology Advice, we published our 2023 IT buyer survey. Among the questions we asked were, we asked people who'd taken part in business technology purchases, where did you find information to educate yourself, to do research, to evaluate products and services? And then we went back and we asked them, well, what was the most influential thing when it came to your purchase decision? And vendor-created content and sales interactions actually ranked last for influence. So when you talk about, can you convince somebody who's not in market to suddenly be in market, that data suggests you probably can.
And it's interesting as well, Mike. I've been on a number of timeshare presentations. And every time when I was younger, I didn't know what I was getting into. And so they give you the offer. We'll give you this free dinner. We'll give you this, that. You just got to sit through this 90-minute presentation. And you're like, okay, that sounds like a pretty good deal. I'm not going to buy, but I really like the incentive. And then they end up being so persuasive. First of all, usually the offers are actually pretty good. They're pretty compelling. We're not talking about the terms of what you have to pay, but just the idea of going on vacation to all these beautiful places and having people wait on you hand and foot. You're like, I could get used to this. I could live like this. Sometimes, a couple of times, my wife and I actually made the purchase because the salespeople were so persuasive. And then as we drove away, we had buyer's remorse because we said, you know, we came in, we had no intention of buying. Our finances are not in the right place. In one case, Mike, my wife and I didn't own a home yet. And we had just bought a timeshare. We're like, in what world does that make sense? We called them up. We said, we want a refund, right? So there's going to be some cases where you are so persuasive, you do persuade them, but at what cost?
So we talked about the challenge of time and having the time for marketers to build an audience that they could market to and turn into customers. But there's another challenge that I hear a lot about from B2B marketers when you talk about audience building, and that's the content. That's the scaling of the content, making sure that there's enough content, that it exists in enough formats to spread your message over the various channels, meeting the various preferences of the consumers of the content. That seems to be a real challenge for a lot of marketers.
Okay, I've got a couple of threads on this one that I think could be interesting. One is, Mike, you're familiar with the show Survivor, aren't you?
I am. My wife is a dedicated Survivor follower. Hey! I am sometimes in the room.
There you go. I love it. I love it. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily describe myself as a long-term fan. I remember when reality TV first started to take off, you know, after the Real World was like the first one in the US on MTV back in the maybe the early 90s. But then when the competitive show started to crop up, Survivor, American Idol, Apprentice,
Big Brother.
Survivor and there you go, Big Brother. Big Brother's actually, that's like the godfather along with Survivor. Survivor has 40, I think they're on season 44 or 45. That is absolutely ridiculous. It is the same premise, the same concept, the same host, right? How can they keep on bringing the, and yet audiences keep coming back? So being able to find content premises or create content franchises that are compelling to your audience allows you to essentially, instead of reinventing the wheel every time, you're just coming out with the next series. So this is something I'm digging into pretty deeply right now, finding ways in B2B to create content franchises. They've got to be compelling, informative, educational. They've got to support your brand message and find ways to tie back to the product. You have to check those boxes. But once you've done that, can you create a content franchise that people want to come back to? That's the first thread. That's the first seed I'm going to plant. The second seed I want to plant, Mike, is I want content professionals to make content like a comedian and bomb. What does that mean? So I love studying stand-up comedians. It's fascinating to me how an individual can get on a stage, talk for an hour, and keep an audience just in the palm of their hands. That is like magic to me. It's like, so how in the world? You know how they do it? These comedians, think of the biggest names, Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Kevin Hart. They will go to small hole-in-the-wall clubs all across the country, unannounced, often unannounced. They will workshop their material. Chris Rock will actually have a notepad on stage. He'll tell a joke, it'll bomb, he'll take notes. He'll tell a joke. Out of 20 jokes, maybe one might be decent. He's taking notes the whole time. I think there are pressures that are put on us marketers to always hit home runs. But social media, if we look at the other side of the coin of that pressure on social, where you post and you want to get 100 reactions or 1,000 reactions, On the other side of that, if you only get 5 reactions, well, if it was bad content, not that many people saw it. But just in the act of you creating that content, you will kind of know, you know what? I feel like there was something in there. There's something in the DNA of that one. I want to come back and revisit that. Put out a lot of content. It doesn't all have to be high visibility. Workshop your content in public. Find the nuggets, the DNA, the core that works. Recycle that into future content. And then by the time you get to Madison Square Garden, you're going to have a 1-hour set. All your jokes are going to be home runs. You're just not going to start out that way.
Yeah, that's good advice. I've been creating content for longer than I'd care to admit, but today we have all of the insights, the data, the visitors, where they came from. So when you're trying to evaluate content, you have a lot more information than you did, say, in the newspaper days when I got started in this business. You didn't have that feedback loop that gave you an idea how your content was performing. We talked a little bit about this earlier when we were discussing long-term versus short-term and the audience building as a long-term tactic. How do you recommend marketers have that discussion with their leadership around audience building, around the timeline, the resources, the upfront investment? That can be a very difficult conversation to have with leaders who are looking for short-term results. And today, that's a lot of leaders.
Yeah, Mike, I love this question. This is probably the toughest question that marketers are facing because a lot of our executives, this is not a knock on them. They are facing significant pressures. They have to report to the board. They have to show that we're on track to meet our numbers. And so our long-term, I remember telling a COO whom I was reporting to, I say, give me 12 months. On it was for a podcast. Give me 12 months and you're going to be thrilled with the results. And he told me, I don't have 12 months. Like my job and your job might not be around in 12 months if we don't turn this ship around. So let me answer the question in these few ways. First, I would suggest a lot of our executives really value our qualitative insight. They value our experience. But they need some sort of numbers, something quantitative as well, not only for them to be convinced, but for them to carry our message to the board. Okay, so let's talk about the status quo. So Metadata, I used to work for Metadata some years ago. They have an annual report that they put out on performance ads. And they put it out about a month ago, and it was interesting. The numbers essentially showed that the bulk of their clients spent their ad dollars on lead gen campaigns with the word download being the most popular call to action. So essentially, a lot of B2B companies are still, even on paid social, still trying to get people to download an ebook, where a lot of us haven't necessarily done that as consumers in a few years. It's not really the way buyers are consuming data. So first, we want to use things like the metadata report. Chris Walker at Refine Labs also has something called The Vault that is surfacing for the first time a lot of research, hard numbers that back up the fact that the status quo in B2B marketing is very precarious. So it's not just an opinion, there are actually numbers behind it. Let's start there. After you've presented that, I would suggest that you propose a portfolio approach. And I honestly don't know that too many executives would oppose this. So think of it as hunters versus gatherers or hunters versus farmers. Hunters are the salespeople. They're the marketing campaigns that are trying to get leads in. They're the pipeline. That's all the demand capture work, the pipeline work. If 5% of our marketplace is in market right now, some portion of our budget should be allocated to getting that 5% into our funnel. Now, should that be 100% of our budget? Executives might probably say, okay, maybe not 100. They might say 99 or 95, but let's actually get them, tie them down and get them to say how much of that budget should go toward this quarter's pipeline versus, let's say, the next 3 quarters pipeline. After you have that framing of hunters versus farmers, okay, we got to make sure we have marketing resources who can work on the in-market demand. Get that pipeline. If you don't have that satisfied, your executive is not going to hear anything else that you say. You're going to sound like Charlie Brown's teacher. They're not going to hear anything.
My kids once we discovered the Charlie Brown teacher.
Oh, classic! I love it.
They were so confused at first, and then I kind of explained it to them. I was like, it's a kid's world in Charlie Brown.
Yes, yes. Then they're like, ah, that does resonate.
And then they're like, and now I think it's gotten to the point where that's how they hear us. So,
oh my gosh. Like, oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, parenting. What are you going to do? I've got two myself.
Sorry for that aside.
So I think if we can have that framing, Mike, of hunting versus farming, goodness, civilization wouldn't have survived if all we did was hunting alone. If all we do is sales, if all we do is talk to prospects, whether or not they're in market, saying, do you want to buy now? How about now? How about now? How about now? That might hit the numbers this quarter and next quarter. We can't run a business long-term that way. And so let's say the execs tell us, okay, 95% of our marketing budget has to go to in-quarter pipeline. You get 5% to focus on the next few quarters. Okay, now we're talking. Now we want to say, how can we go to those ideal prospects who are not yet in market, but they're the right people? Cool. There's a number of things you can do. What I would recommend is you start to build your email database as opposed to building audiences or relying on audiences on social. We've all seen the throttling back of access on LinkedIn, but they're only the latest platform to do that. Facebook did it. Instagram did it. I think Twitter's doing it right now. So don't build your house on sand, right? Build your email database. How do we get people in 2023 to opt in? They're not really falling for the, you know, 7 tips to do XYZ. Give me your email and I'll send you that PDF. That worked super well 10 years ago. Not going to knock it 10 years ago. It's not as good now. So how can we actually earn the trust of our ideal customers? We'll go back to those content franchises that we talked about. We'll also talk about things like, you know, information is, there's a wealth of information now, especially with AI. So information is not necessarily the scarce commodity. What about connection? What about things like roundtables, AMAs, ask me anythings, office hours, cohort groups, like a 4-week cohort where you walk your ideal prospects and help them get a solution without them buying anything. There's a handful of ways in which we could dial up the interaction, the interactivity, put our subject matter experts on the front line, let people touch them, let them touch the cloth a little bit of all these brilliant engineers, these brilliant strategists we have in-house. That will build more affinity for our brand so that when those prospects get in market, there's going to be a halo over our brand and hopefully they choose us.
And there's a thread that sort of runs through some of those examples you gave, and that's originality. I mean, for all the talk about ChatGPT, it's not creating anything new. Everything that it's building for you is based on someone else's work. And I mentioned the research report, the IT buyer survey earlier. Original research, there's only one place you're going to get it. So there's a lot of value in being original today in a world where there's a lot of content, but not all of it is original.
That's it. That's it. But the trick, the key to getting approval is first making sure that all of the immediate term pipeline needs are being met. And for some of my fellow marketers, you're going to work in organizations where the marketing resources are so limited that all you can do is be all hands on deck on this quarter. That's just going to be your reality. And I was in those situations multiple times. So I empathize with you. I would say, do what you need to do in the short term. Hit those pipeline goals. Longer term, you need to sort of decide how you want your career to be defined.
All right. Our last question. It's the one we ask just about everybody here on the B2B Nation podcast. What's your favorite tool? What is the one thing that you cannot work without?
Okay. So I thought about a lot of different tools that I enjoy. It could be hosting a podcast where I get to speak with you know, great minds like Mike, and we really go deep on subjects. It could be streaming services like Netflix, where I get creative ideas completely outside of my realm. We just talked about stand-up comedy. We just talked about Survivor and reality shows. It could be Evernote, which is sort of my brain outside of my brain. But I actually want to go back to what we just talked about, dialing up the interactivity. There are a couple of communities that are bringing marketers together, not just to network, but to actually do the work. You all may have heard of Jay Akunzo. He's the host of a podcast called Unthinkable. Yep. He created a community about 6 months ago called Creator Kitchen. And it's essentially a gathering of marketers, a lot of content professionals who really value the practice. They value the quality of the work that they're creating. They're not just about reach, they're about resonance. I'm not even a member in Creator Kitchen yet, but it's on the top of my list of things to join. I would recommend looking for a community like that. There's another one called Brainstorm Road, a slightly lower price point. You could explore that as well. But Creator Kitchen would be the number one thing in 2023 that I'm recommending to fellow marketers. We need a place to practice, a place that is safe, a place where we can be affirmed, a place where we can collaborate. Because I think that as AI starts to take more and more of the efficiency work and the volume work, marketers are going to need to differentiate by learning how to develop audiences, by learning how to create resonance, create content franchises that people love. That's why I would recommend Creator Kitchen.
And just like that, we're back to originality again. Balaji Oyedije, thanks for joining us again on B2B Nation.
Mike, this was fun as always. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Balaji Oyedije for appearing on this episode of the B2B Nation podcast. If you found this episode insightful or helpful, subscribe to B2B Nation on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast content. Thanks to Jacob Rainey of the Technology Advice Crew. Mnemonics and the Guild wrote our theme song. We'll catch you next time on B2B Nation.